Welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different. Instead of interviewing someone, I'm going to go ahead and break down the rights that enable artists and songwriters to get paid. The music business can be extremely convoluted at times and often by design, making it difficult for those to get paid, particularly folks that are independent. Anyways, I digress. Let's get to it. Before I dive too deep, I want to set a framework for the discussion. With music revenues, there's two umbrellas that the revenue streams fall under: that of the sound recording or the master recording, and publishing. The sound recording is exactly what you think it is. It's the master recording of any given song that artists, producers, mix engineers, mastering engineers, and of course a lot more people throughout the process come together to create. It's the song that end users hear on the radio, that they can stream with digital service providers like Spotify, Apple Music, purchase on vinyl, etc. Publishing refers to the underlying copyright. Think of this as the intellectual property. This is what the songwriter came up with: the notation, the music, the lyrics. I know some of you are probably going, wait a sec, I write all my own songs and I record them. Why is this split? Traditionally, of course, there was the record industry, which was selling the recordings, and publishing, which, you know, rewind 100 years, was predominantly transcribing songs onto a piece of paper and selling the sheet music. These traditional structures paved the way for the modern music business, which I'm going to dive into a little bit later. To bring this all home, humor me with this example. If we were to compare this to the movies, the master recording is the final product. Let's say Marvel's latest movie, Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. From an audience perspective, the final film, what you see in theaters, is the equivalent of the master recording. The script, on the other hand, is the publishing. Naturally, in this process, the screenwriting comes first. You have to have a movie to make in order to go into production. As I said before, some of you may be saying, well, yeah, I'm the artist and the songwriter. The equivalent of that would be Good Will Hunting, where Matt Damon and Ben Affleck wrote the script and then ultimately produced the film, starred in the film, etc. However, that's not always the case. In many cases, songwriters are pitching to artists, or they just often collab with artists, and someone else brings it to fruition. Both sides contribute to the final product, but they operate in fundamentally different ways. Hopefully that was helpful. Now that we've established that framework, the plan for this episode is to break down the six revenue-generating rights on the publishing or songwriting side of things, the three revenue-generating rights from the sound recording, and how to collect on all nine. If you have any questions or want further clarification on stuff, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. I love breaking all this down and would love to dive in deeper. Being that this is how artists and songwriters make a living, I feel it's critical to democratize this knowledge, and frankly, it's a little absurd that most music curriculum don't dive into the business side of things. Sadly, this refers to many college and university programs as well. I won't name names, but I was talking to an extremely talented songwriter who's literally majoring in songwriting at one of the largest universities in Washington, and they were not aware of music publishing processes or how to protect their IP. So that was a big motivation for this. All right, so what are the six revenue-generating rights on the publishing side? When I say publishing, again, I mean the rights to the original copyright, the music and lyrics, not the sound recording. The six revenue-generating rights are mechanical rights, performance rights, synchronization rights, derivative rights, print rights, and grand rights. So what the heck does all that mean? We'll start at the top. Mechanical rights yield mechanical royalties, which come from the reproduction and distribution of the underlying composition embodied in sound recordings sold as physical media, downloads, or accessed in on-demand streams. And royalties are actually paid out on a rate set by the Copyright Royalty Board, a trio of federal judges operating under congressional jurisdiction. What this means is that three judges come together every few years and set the royalty rate on the publishing side. So they determine how much songwriters get paid for each copy sold. The reason it's important to denote the difference between publishing and the sound recording is, in this case, we're talking about the reproduction and distribution of an underlying composition, or the songwriting. The same song can be performed by multiple artists. For example, Paul Simon writes and releases The Sound of Silence in 1964, released with his group Simon and Garfunkel, then Disturbed covers it in 2015 and it goes platinum. Because they are different artists, on the sound recording side, the artists are making money off of their sound recording. However, Paul Simon is the songwriter of Sound of Silence, therefore he and his estate are getting paid out on the songwriting. Now, kind of a funny example because of copyright protections, and that was actually written pre-1972, but that's a whole different can of worms. That was just more to highlight an example of a song I love. Next, we have performance rights or performance royalties, which likely go beyond what you think of as performance. Naturally, this does encompass the performance of a song at a live show. However, it also includes a song being broadcast digitally over radio, digital radio, yes, they're different, cable radio, TV broadcasts, venues, and public facilities. These rates are also set by the government, in this case by the Department of Justice's consent decrees placed on the two largest PROs, or performance rights organizations, ASCAP and BMI, with rate setting overseen by the Southern District Court of New York. Essentially, performance royalties are paid out every time the song is quote-unquote performed. As such, it is critical for songwriters and artists alike to register with a PRO, because every time you are performing a song, either one of your own, probably most important for each individual in this case, you get paid for that performance. So if you are out at your local bar performing, you are supposed to be getting paid for that composition. I have friends that have been performing for years and are not registered, and that kills me because it is so critical. That is just money you are losing out on. So research your preferred PROs. I personally am registered with BMI. It was a decision I made when I was 18 years old by literally looking at the roster of big artists on ASCAP and BMI, and at the time going, oh, I like these folks. So probably not the best way to go about it, but they're the two best, and I don't really don't think you can go wrong. Next up, we've got synchronization or sync royalties, and this refers to the underlying composition in congruence with moving images. This can be film, TV, or advertisements. Unlike mechanical royalties and performance royalties on the publishing side, these are not rates set by the government. They're actually a private negotiation between the owner of the underlying copyright, which could be a publisher or an independent songwriter, such as yourself, meaning whatever dollar amount the two parties agree on is how much the rights owner is being paid for the usage of their song. This could be Nike using your song in a commercial. This could be the theme song for a movie or TV show, or it could be your song playing in the background of a given scene. Really, this just extends to any usage of a song in congruence with visual media. So that's what sync rights are. This has become an increasingly important medium for songwriters and artists alike to make their living, because you get far more for one sync deal than potentially years of streaming, if not a lifetime of streaming. Next up is derivative rights, and this falls under the songwriting copyright, and this is when someone takes a pre-existing work and uses that material to create a new composition. What most people are probably familiar with would be sampling. As you may know, you cannot sample someone else's copyrighted work without permission, and only the underlying copyright owner has the right to create or authorize someone else to create a derivative work or a new version of their work. Anytime this is done, the rights owner or publishing owner or songwriter, however you want to look at it, is supposed to be paid for that work. Now we are on to right number 5, which is print rights. For me, the easiest way to break this down is in the context of a print license. This is an agreement between a music user and the owner of the copyright or composition, granting permission to rearrange, print, or display the music notes or lyrics of a given song. So this can be literally printed sheet music, or someone coming to you and saying, hey, we want to use some of the lyrics from your song on this coffee cup. For example, Coca-Cola prints song lyrics on soda cans, and even if it's a small fraction of the song, say 4 to 5 words, they need a print license. So the person who wrote the song or their publisher gets paid every time those lyrics are printed. And finally, we have grand rights. This is a special type of music licensing referring to the right to perform musical compositions within the context of a dramatic work. This includes stage performances such as musical theater and concert dance. And the key difference between this and sync rights is that sync refers to individual performances of a song, where grand rights cover the right to present the show in its entirety on stage. This does not include medleys, video footage, logos, etc. And that's it for the six revenue-generating rights on the publishing side. Are you still with me? Let's get to the sound recording rights. This is how master rights holders could exploit the sound recording. I should note that exploit is a positive term in the music business. It refers to making money off of said asset, whether it be the composition or sound recording. There are three primary revenue generating rights for master recording holders or master rights holders. Think of this as a traditional record label, or if you're independent, this would be your final product, your sound recording. The three rights are the right to reproduce and distribute, performance rights, and derivative rights. Now, you may be saying, didn't you already talk about some of these on the publishing side? Yes, but they differ when we're talking about the sound recording itself. The right to reproduce and distribute is also seen as the mechanical reproduction right of a composition. In the same way mechanical royalties are collected on the songwriting or publishing side, this refers to the reproduction and distribution of the sound recording, so copies of that master recording, as opposed to the intellectual property. So this includes the song in the form of digital download, think Bandcamp or iTunes, vinyl records, CDs, etc. This crosses over into sync licensing, which I referenced before. As a quick refresher, it's the synchronization of a song with moving pictures. So movies, TV shows, commercials, YouTube videos, etc. What we're referring to in this case is the master recording itself. So for TV and film, to use a song, you have to get two licenses. There's the synchronization license from the owner of the copyright, which is what we discussed with publishing, and a master use license from the owner of the recording. This falls under that right to reproduce and distribute, in which there's mechanical reproduction of a right to a composition. The second revenue-generating right on the sound recording side is performance rights for the use of the master recording. Revenues for the performance of master recordings are a little bit different than publishing, which is an ongoing debate. Fun fact, in the United States, performers or artists are not paid for terrestrial radio play, so AM/FM radio stations. The United States is one of three countries in the world that do not pay artists for such, along with Iran and North Korea. What this means is that when a song is played on the radio, the artist is not paid, but publishers or songwriters are still paid for the public performance on terrestrial radio. So if you hear Patsy Cline sing Crazy on the radio, songwriter Willie Nelson and his publisher are compensated through BMI for the public performance. Again, make sure you sign up for a PRO. But the estate of Patty Cline receives no pay for the performance. Neither do the studio musicians, vocalists, or the record label. And this is a result of some longstanding arguments made by terrestrial broadcasters that it's free promotion. The radio means promotion, which equals record sales. Again, kind of tied back to the traditional model. And as such, they convinced Congress that they are exempt from paying public performance royalties for sound recordings. Aside from the fact that people aren't getting paid for their work, it introduces another complicated layer, which is U.S.-based master rights owners cannot collect on radio play internationally. So despite the fact that only three countries don't pay public performance royalties on terrestrial radio, because the U.S. doesn't pay U.S.-based artists, U.S.-based artists won't get paid in the likes of like the U.K., or something like that. So you can see where there's a lot of missed revenue. That's a whole separate policy discussion, but something I think is important to note. Moving away from terrestrial radio, master rights holders do get paid for interactive and non-interactive streaming and radio services. So what I mean by interactive is services in which the listener is in charge of what is being played. So think Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, etc. Non-interactive, on the other hand, refers to services where the listener is not in charge of curation. So they may pick a station they want to listen to, but they don't get to pick the song. So think SiriusXM, Pandora, NPR streaming, webcast stations such as KEXP Online, of course not their broadcasts on terrestrial radio. The third and final revenue-generating right on the sound recording side is the derivative right, or the right to re-record a previously written or recorded song. So this includes remixes or videos using the sound recording. Going back to the sampling discussion, if you sample a piece of a sound recording, that is something that the master rights holder has derivative rights to. So this could be a major label. If it's an independent artist, they own that sound. So in order to sample, bringing this full circle, there's actually two derivative rights that you have to get cleared in order to use it. There's the copyright, so the publishing, the composition itself, and the copyright of the actual version of the song, or the master. You'd have to get both sides cleared in order to use a work. What's interesting about this is if an artist wants to sample a guitar riff from a Beatles record, per se, but they play the riff instead of copying and pasting, they only need to get permission for the composition, not the master, because they recreated the sound, and as a result, it's not being pulled from the master, therefore it doesn't need to be cleared. So what that would mean is negotiating a deal with the publisher or the copyright holder, but not with the copyright holder of the recording, i.e. a major label or artist. So those are all the revenue-generating rights, and along the way, I kind of talked about how to collect on them. But what I'm going to do now is, from a self-released perspective, walk through what you can collect on, what organizations you need to be a part of in order to collect, and how to get your house in order. I'll also try to get visual representations of these workflows developed and posted on the Made for Music social so that you can really see how all this works. I think that would probably simplify this even greater. I know audio only, it's a lot to take in. Nonetheless, want to walk through how money flows to songwriters, artists, and then, of course, publishers and labels, depending on what kind of situation you're in. Of course, if you're fully independent as a songwriter and artist, you should be set up as your own publisher and label, which is something I want to dive into. So if we start with radio and radio-like services, there are blanket licenses that determine who gets paid and how much. So if we're talking just broadcast radio, you need to be signed up for a PRO, or a performance rights organization. That would be ASCAP, BMI, CSAC. For all radio play, they collect the royalties and pay them to the songwriter and publisher. What I just found out was that even if you're a self-published songwriter and you register with them as a songwriter, you're still missing out on the publishing side of things. So you want to be registered as a songwriter and a publisher, collect on both sides of that. As noted earlier, in the United States, terrestrial broadcasters do not pay performers or sound recording or master recording copyright owners. This is important in the United States because it means that you're not going to get paid on the artist side or the sound recording side for radio play, and truly not in other countries. If you're an artist outside of the United States and you get US-based radio play, you will only get paid if you were also the songwriter, and you'd be paid out on the publishing side. Again, you'd have to be set up as a songwriter and a publisher with a performance rights organization that operates within the United States to get paid out on that. So that's terrestrial radio. For radio-like services, think Pandora, SiriusXM, NPR streaming, etc., we do split into the composition or publishing and the sound recording. So again, for the publishing side of things, that's where the PRO comes into play. Same as broadcast radio, you need to be signed up with a performance rights organization. They collect the monies and split them between the songwriting and publishing side of the house. Now, to be paid out on the sound recording or the master, you have to be signed up with Sound Exchange, and they collect the digital performance royalties of a sound recording. And what they do is they pay 50% to the record label or master rights owner. If you're independent, that's you. 45% to the performer, also you. And then 5% goes to the AFM and SAG-AFTRA fund, which funnels the money then to the background singers and musicians featured on the track. So that is the money workflow and necessary organizations for radio and radio-like services. So next, let's go to digital stores. This is the likes of iTunes and Amazon. Not Amazon Music, but Amazon that sells MP3s of a given track. This is where distributors or your aggregators such as CD Baby and TuneCore, DistroKid, etc. come into play. So, of course, you go through these to upload your music, they distribute them to all the various platforms. When there is a digital sale on, say, iTunes, Amazon, etc., they send the money to the aggregator, so CD Baby, DistroKid, or TuneCore, receive the funds from the sale, they take their fee, and they pass that along to the artist or master rights holder. The master rights holder is responsible for paying the mandated 9.1 cents per track to the publisher. Of course, this is only relevant if the performer recorded and released songs written by someone else. If you wrote the song yourself, it's super simple. You just keep whatever cut you get from your distributor. However, if someone else wrote the song, you're responsible for paying their publisher. If they're self-published, paying them directly. Again, that's 9.1 cents per track. Lastly, we have interactive services, or digital service providers that we tend to call streaming services. So this is Spotify, Radio, Beats, Rhapsody, etc. Now, as of 2018, a new process emerged, and it's yet another group that you have to be a part of, so bear with me here. For the on-demand stream of a song, that counts as both the performance of the composition and the licensed use of a sound recording. So what does that mean? Well, it means the PROs are taking their cut for the performance of a composition. This is, again, the performance rights organizations such as ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, which collects the monies and distributes them to the songwriter and publisher. Now, I've talked about them for interactive services as well as radio and radio-like services. You just sign up for one and they will function across all these different mediums. The next organization that I haven't discussed yet is the Mechanical Licensing Collective. This is an organization that was set up as a result of the Music Modernization Act to centralize metadata access and management, essentially. So what they do is they collect the 10.5% minus the payment due to the PROs on the publishing side, and they distribute funds to either self-published songwriters, or I should say self-administered songwriters, meaning you're taking care of all the administration, publishers, administrators, CMOs, and others. If you're self-published, the money should be going directly to you. If you have a publisher, they will be responsible for collecting your mechanical royalties and passing them along to you, whatever the agreement may be. So the PROs and the Mechanical Licensing Collective are the two entities you need to be a part of to collect on the publishing. On the sound recording side, the performance royalties there will go through your distributor or aggregator. So if you're at a label, they'll be collecting those. If you're distributing through like CD Baby or TuneCore, something like that, they're collecting the money from the streaming services, say Spotify, and passing along your performance royalties. Again, probably somewhere between 5 to 9% goes to the aggregator. The rest is yours to keep. An entirely different podcast would be why royalty rates are so low, and unfortunately, why there's very little that can be done in a realistic manner due to the way that major labels negotiated the licensing of their catalogs to these big streaming services, which has left very little money on the table for A, their own artists, and B, self-administered artists. But again, whole nother discussion. To close this out, I just want to re-highlight the 6 revenue-generating rights on the publishing side, the 3 on the master recording side, and the organizations you need to be a part of to collect on them. So publishing rights are mechanical rights, performance rights, synchronization rights, derivative rights, print rights, and grand rights. On the sound recording side, you've got the right to reproduce and distribute, performance rights, and derivative rights. To collect on all of these revenue-generating rights, you need to be a part of 4 organizations. First, you need to be a part of a performance rights organization such as BMI, ASCAP, or CSAC and registered as a songwriter. If you're self-published, you need to also register as a publisher. Second, you need to register with Sound Exchange to collect digital performance royalties for non-interactive services. Third, you need to be registered with the Mechanical Licensing Collective to collect mechanical royalties from interactive streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music. Lastly, you need to have a distributor, but if you're uploading all your stuff to Spotify, Apple Music, etc., you're all set. This would be your CD Baby, TuneCore, DistroKid, whatever your preferred one is. They have their own models, and you can just pick the one that's best for you and whatever services match what you're looking for. What's important is when you upload these songs for distribution, you need to go to all of those three organizations and make sure all of your songs are registered. I know it sounds like a lot of work, but this will ensure you're actually collecting all the royalties being generated off all the work you've done. You put so much work into the art. You owe it to yourself to ensure you are being compensated for all the different ways your music continues to live on. And of course, copyright your work. Make sure you are protected. You can do that with the U.S. Copyright Office, and that will ensure you are protected. You can do this for the sound recording and the composition. The music space is so complex and convoluted at times. I genuinely hope this helped. I would love your feedback. And if you've got any questions or want to dive into some stuff further or discuss policy around these kinds of things, I would absolutely love to. So please don't hesitate to reach out. And as always, if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I genuinely appreciate that extra effort. It goes a long way, and I will see you next time.